Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 107. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
And Graham Thickens.
Yeah, I post a mini demo morning to y'all.
And Phil Wilson.
How you doing, everybody? Yes, Graham is basking in the mini demo afterglow.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it's either that or I'm still buzzed. I can't figure it out yet.
Uh-oh. Overserved at mini demo.
I got in early.
So how was it last night? I saw some of the twit pics and stuff, and it looked like a perfect venue.
Oh, it was. It was
a classy joint.
Yeah. Over the top, great. Yeah, and very, very crowded. I didn't get the count, but had to be 400.
Oh, wow.
For sure.
Quite possibly the first place we've ever been at a mini demo where you couldn't hose it out at the end of the night. It was pretty nice.
That's great. So it wasn't sweaty.
No, not at all. And very comfortable. And obviously the Schultz Hall lent itself to, great tech. So there were, no problems with waiting for lights to come up and down. And I was very impressed with the transition of everything. It was probably one of the smoothest run mini demos I've seen as far as, getting people on and off for their demos. It was really a good show.
Wow.
And it was great. And the only one that couldn't make it was Kid Blog, because Dan Flees blew his knee out, I guess. So we had everyone on the list. I don't think there was a replacement for Kid Blog, was there?
Yeah, there was the gaming social site. I'm sorry,
not Conquer.
No, the social site. I was going through that today, and they were
the replacement for Kid Blog.
Yeah, and while you guys are talking there, I'll look up what the name of that was, and apologize for that, guys.
What were some of the other good demos?
Well, I think LitLift kind of drew the biggest applause. I mean,
really,
an app to help you write your novel, and they asked for a show of hands. How many people want to write a book someday? And it was like a third of the audience.
Wow. Yeah.
So that seemed to really resonate with people. And he did a great job of presenting it. Real high energy guy. What did he say he is? A UI designer at US Bank or something?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what it is. And LitLift was clearly the darling of the event. I think what really put it over the top was the fact that it had a character name generator that everybody was impressed.
Yeah, people seemed to really get off on that. I was going to say some of the other Inveni was great. TST Media with their sport engine. I mean, there was some really serious, apps that were presented very, very well, and everything went without a hitch. I mean, I don't think anybody's computer broke down or anything. It was very well. The logistics were just great, and the theater with a balcony. I didn't even realize it was a balcony. That thing held like 300 and some people, and it was pretty doggone full.
Yeah, I saw a twit pic or Y Frog whatever from Jamie Thingelstead from the balcony. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, you're going to need binoculars to see the screen.
Well, I thought Phil did a great job with his twit pics too, or whatever app he was using.
They were just the fact that, again, I think they really were well put together. Oh, by the way, Graham, replacement event or replacement demo was from Evolve.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Evolve HQ, which is a social site for gamers. I love this. I love this tagline for Evolve. Quit playing with yourself.
That guy was like the fastest talker I think I've ever heard.
Presented, but at the same time, I found it funny because you can talk. Evolve is all about gamers being able to talk to gamers, amongst themselves without the prying eyes of their bosses.
The whole idea was you can do. It's a desktop app you use at work. Is it an Air app? I think it is.
I'm not really sure.
Yeah, but the guy crammed about a 30-minute presentation into his 7 minutes. I thought, but it was good. I mean, and the UI looked great, and so it was a pretty impressive lineup last night, I gotta say.
Well, it's a lot of these we've talked to a lot of these folks and done interviews on them and so forth. And, you know, Invenny and Zipnosis and Kid Blog and Engine and, you know, the TST Media folks. And I looked at that too. Just, I'm really bummed I couldn't make it last night, but I looked at this list and I just thought, my God, this is the strongest showing yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. And I the post will go up today here probably within the next 30 minutes or 40 minutes after we get this the podcast done. But my observation was probably the best group of presenters I've seen. Everybody was very confident and passionate about their product, but also got through it really well. I think there's a special note, and I'm, this is one of, well, I guess there was a hardware piece at one of the other demos, but the PassiPass password generator, Sigflup put that together, and that was that to me really drove home what tech and innovation is all about. This is a very, obviously a very beta prototype sort of a piece of hardware that she had with her, and I mean it looked like it. It was crammed into a little metal box with plenty of silicone glue and things like that. But I thought it was very impressive for the whole evening.
That's great. That's great. I just wanted to mention that, Graham, you did a great post, and I did not even see this
before. Oh, the one last night right before I left for a mini demo, you mean?
Yeah. So why don't you talk about that for a moment?
Well, I got alerted yesterday afternoon that there was a deal that Internet Broadcasting did. They sold part of the business to Cox, the big media company, to a unit of theirs called Cox Digital Solutions, which was just technically formed or named 2 days prior when they merged some operations with Adify, a company they bought, an ad network company they bought in 2008. So Cox, which is headquartered out of Atlanta, has this unit now called Cox Digital Solutions, which is based in out of New York. And sure enough, they did a deal, end of 2010 deal, to buy part of Internet Broadcasting's business. And it involves basically their sales folks, their ad sales group.
Got it.
And some related products that are part of that business. And it involves about 50 people, leaving, I think, what did I say in the post, about 240 total at Internet Broadcasting, I believe 160 of which are based here in the Twin Cities. So anyway, it was going back to our New Year's predictions post or podcast that we did, what was that, just last week, right? Or was it 2 weeks ago? We did in early 2010, I predicted that Internet Broadcasting would get acquired. So the whole thing didn't get acquired, but part of it did.
You were close. You were close.
Yeah. And I had a chance to interview Jeff Kimball, the COO, and get some details from him. It remains to be seen whether it's going to involve the Minnesota employees, the salespeople leaving town. It probably they won't. They'll be probably working out of a Cox office here in the Twin Cities. But most of the 50 that are going to Cox are based in New York City, where Internet Broadcasting has had an office there for some time.
Right, right.
So it's all in the post.
Well, let's bring in Julio Ojeda Zapata,
and I know him.
We're going to talk about tech with respect to the Mac App Store and some other things for our guest today. So let me add Julio. Let's just take a second here. And
hello,
he's there here. He Julio, hi.
Can you hear me okay?
Are you sure in your car?
Sounds like you're in St. Paul, like a long way away.
Oh, can you hear me okay? I'm in my office, but I'm talking on my laptop's mic. Is the sound okay, or is the audio crappy? Or
no, it's fine. You're fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'd love you to dress up and put on a headset, but it's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not Twitter or anything, so you can be casual.
Does this sound better?
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. You're dancing here.
All right.
So how you doing?
Oh, pretty good. I got a splitting headache because I'm wearing my first set of progressive eyeglasses, the ones that sort of shift depending on how you tilt your head.
Oh, yeah. We call those bifocals, the old man. So,
lineless bifocals. We're all into those.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, and so I feel like I'm on some kind of an acid trip or something.
Well, and you weren't at Mini Demo last night, or you'd probably feel worse. Or were you there? You weren't there, were you?
No, I couldn't make it.
All right, so I'd like to bring in our special guest today, a man named Michael Ray. And Tim, if you would, can you kind of kick us off and introduce Michael?
So I'd like to introduce Michael Ray, who's president of Mariner Software. Mariner is one of those vulnerable old companies that I've used their software for, gosh, it's got to be over 20 years now. I think they became best known in the 90s with Mariner Write and Calc for the Mac. And that was, at the time, really the only good alternative to Microsoft Office, which really wasn't that great at that time. And since then, they've added a whole host of applications, StoryMill for novels, and a whole bunch of other stuff, and have introduced not only iPhone apps, but also iPad apps as well. So we thought we'd have Michael on to talk about the evolution of the company and the experience over the past few weeks being in the Mac App Store. So welcome, Michael.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So how's it been from the first few weeks in the App Store? And I'd like to kind of also get a feel from you to your decision making of which apps you put in there, because I noticed that Calc and Mariner Write are not yet in the App Store. So kind of, can you take us through that decision making process?
Yeah. When we first heard that Apple was going to be introducing the Mac App Store way back when, we immediately came to the conclusion that we need to have all our apps in there as soon as possible, preferably on the launch date. And while we tried to do that, we are a relatively small company and have only a certain amount of development bandwidth that we can devote to this project. So we did get five applications into the Mac App Store on the first day of launch, and the sixth one is sort of in limbo right now in Apple legal, which is another story in itself. But there are a few products that we are still working on to bring in. Mac Journal and Montage are two other big ones that will be introduced to the Mac App Store here within the next, I'd say, week or two. Mariner Write and Mariner Calc are probably not going to make it in at this point. Sometime down the road, we'll probably look back and we have right now sort of in the process, and it's been going on for quite some time, a development project on both of those apps. As you mentioned earlier, they are very, very old, and because they are so old, there is some code in the apps that would immediately get rejected from Apple. So instead of going through that process, we thought, let's not even do this. Let's not go through the hassle of trying to submit these two products when we basically we're in the process of revamping both of them. So when we do introduce the brand new and improved Mariner Write, Mariner Calc, we'll submit it at that point.
So what's the overall submission process like for you guys? One of the complaints about the iOS App Store has been the lack of feedback and communication. Is it different with, because you're playing in both, so is it different in the Mac App Store, or is it the same?
Sadly, no, it's not different.
Okay.
Yeah, this has always been kind of a thorn in my bush here, but it's one of these things, and I don't want to come down harsh on Apple, because they effectively are the mothership for us, I can only guess or only can imagine the type of chaos that they have, that they're going through right now with launching this very large initiative and having, thousands, developers and certainly millions of people accessing their site.
Yeah.
That being said, Apple has a communication issue, and I've been very vocal to them, to anybody who would listen, frankly, about not really as a developer, not really understanding the process, the submission and approval process. You literally have products going in there, and I can certainly give you examples of our own where you submit an application. Let's take, for example, StoryMail. We submitted a StoryMail to the Mac App Store, and within, I think it was 5 days, 4 or 5 days, it was approved. Mac Gourmet Deluxe, the one that's in limbo right now, was submitted, I think we're up to like pretty close to 55 days now. And we still don't know why it is being rejected. We have an idea of why it's being rejected, and we have an idea that it's in legal right now, Apple legal, because of a naming issue. But they don't really explain to you, nor do they keep you in the loop on why a product is being rejected. So I've heard horror stories on both personal experience with other other developers and also just reading on the internet that you literally have people submitting products or companies submitting products and then being kind of hung out to dry. So yeah, it's unfortunate that they haven't corrected that logistical issue in their model.
So you don't get a rejection email. It just never gets approved.
Well, in some cases you do, some cases you don't. And if you do get rejected, sometimes you get the answer on why it was rejected. Other times it's, no, you got rejected and it's kind of up to you to guess why. So it's unfortunate. There's a lot of, inconsistencies in their process. Let me just say, I'm sorry to cut you off. Let me just say that, of all these horror stories that you hear, I'm sure that there are, hundreds of thousands of stories that Apple has went through and done the process right. But it's unfortunate that they've screwed up on a few, and for us, I can certainly say that a couple of their screw ups have cost us some money.
Yeah, Mike, this is Julio. I interviewed you about this for a story that I wrote for the paper, and you said you described this in a really interesting way. You said you sometimes wished desperately that you were a fly on the wall at Apple, trying to understand what the heck is going through their heads. I thought that was very very colorful, which leads me to another point that actually didn't get into my story, but it was an interesting part of our conversation. You were describing to me your problems not only with apps that haven't been approved, but also with apps that have been approved and are in the store, but then in your view are misclassified. I think you mentioned that was a problem. And your products are just not put in the right places, or are not given the right emphasis compared to other products that in your view are not worthy.
Yeah, that's a good point, Julio. the product I'm speaking of, guys, is a product called Paperless. It's one of our most popular products, and it was in the launch of the Mac App Store. It's a I guess you could call it a receipt management, document management product for the Mac. Mm-hmm. And it is very much a productivity application. It was one that we had set up to be in the productivity category of the Mac App Store. So when the App Store was launched, the Mac App Store was launched, Paperless was nowhere to be found in the productivity category, and thus, if you were to look at, all the applications in the productivity category, you did not find Paperless.
It's not in lifestyle, is it?
What's that?
It's not in lifestyle, is it?
No. It's actually it's in business. That was our secondary category selection. But now they've went ahead and corrected it. But for the first week or so, you couldn't find it, which, again, chalk that up to just a stupid error or stupid mistake on Apple's side that unfortunately has probably cost us several thousand dollars.
Oh man. So what, in terms of your experience thus far, and I know the App Store is new, but all of us have been impressed with how seamless and easy it is to choose and install apps and then have them be updated and so forth. what's the upside? Have you, and I guess at the end of the day, it's all about more sales. Have you experienced more thus far?
You know, from a consumer perspective, the Mac App Store is a great resource, especially for newbies, switchers from Windows over to Mac, people that really are maybe Mac savvy-less, if that's a word. It's a great place. They can go to browse for applications. They can buy them. They can install them, and it's all done in one centralized location. It's one quick shot, and you're done, and you don't have to mess around with going to several different sites. From our perspective, this is a great opportunity for us in the fact that this is a brand new channel, and especially with the Verizon news, where there's going to be potentially millions of other customers that are going to be introduced to the Mac App Store. This is a great channel for us, and it's going to be certainly opening some doors to potential customers who had never heard of us.
Mike, you mentioned when I interviewed you for my story, you mentioned, though, that you just regard this as just one of several channels and not necessarily one that's going to be dominant. You mentioned some developers, I can't forget who they are, who are just kind of ditching their other channels or just going all in with the Mac App Store, which strikes me as a little weird. But you mentioned there's no way you're going to do that. You know, it's just another way to sell your products, correct?
Right. That's absolutely right, Julio. This is, for us, is just strictly another reseller channel, and we can't look at it any other way. It could evolve into a channel that's going to be very, very profitable for us and a huge upside for us. But at this point, it's just too early to tell. And the way that we're focusing on the Mac App Store is that, obviously Apple takes their 30% cut right off the top, which is pretty close to what a reseller would take. So that's sort of the way that we're looking at it, in that, you know, this is all it is. It's a glorified reseller, but they obviously have access to millions of people. And as Julio mentioned, I've heard that there are a couple of companies out there that have basically bailed on any other method or any other channel that they were working with, perhaps the retail channel, perhaps selling product off their own website, and have went, I guess you could say, all in with the Mac App Store, which I find incredibly weird.
With the legacy business and Apple couldn't change it, you've got the choice now, either in the App Store or not. Now with the iPhone, which you do have some experience with as well, you didn't have that choice. So if you did, do you think you'd be better off? So you could sell it outside the App Store or in it? I'm just trying to think of the economics of the App Store. Is it that compelling or not?
It probably isn't. At this point, like I said, it's really too early to tell on how this thing is going to evolve. The nice thing about selling the iOS applications is that it is very centralized, and you are competing on sort of a level playing field, in that you basically have a centralized location. People can go, if they're looking for a spreadsheet, for example. In this case, Mariner Calc, which is our spreadsheet, has been around forever, and it probably has some mind share, but there are three or four other smaller applications apps out there, that I would say that nobody really knows about in terms of spreadsheets, but still, again, on the level playing field, they can compete with us. They can compete with Apple with their Numbers application. So, you know, it's probably a good thing in the App Store, but the Mac App Store, it's definitely a different game that we're playing here.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Tim.
I was just going to say, some of the developers in Apple's first-party software They've chosen to, in some cases, dramatically lower the price. Aperture comes to mind as one. It's just like half price. What do you think the logic is behind that?
Boy, I really hope that the Mac App Store doesn't follow the App Store in the race to the bottom model, where you basically the quickest one to 99 cents is going to get the most customers. I really hope it doesn't, and I don't think it will happen, at least not quickly. But God help us if that happens. You have, you know, $40 and $50 applications that are going to be sold for $5. That's you may get three times as many customers going that route, but you will definitely lose a lot of money. And certainly from a smaller perspective, I mean, we have 10 Mac applications and 3 Windows applications and 3 iPhone applications and 2 iPad applications. That's a lot that we can diverse offering that we can kind of rely upon. If there's a one-man shop out there that has one product that he is relying on that he's selling for $50 in the Mac App Store, and all of a sudden the trend is that you have to sell your product at $5, you're going to see a lot of people going out of business, unfortunately.
Yeah, you can't sustain that.
Nope. Mike, you mentioned in our interview one other thing, which is you have a sort of a lack of control in terms of showcasing your product, of Apple showcasing your product versus another product that's roughly in the same category. I can't remember what the example was, but you mentioned that another product that is in the same category as your product was being showcased, and that product was not as worthy. And we'll all admit here that, you know, you have a little bias in that respect. But be that as it may, you were sort of describing to me, you know, this product is not anywhere near as good as your product. Yet it was being showcased very heavily, while yours was essentially being buried, which sort of raises the issue of your lack of control. If you sell your products on your own website, you're the master of all your survey. Here you're sort of at the mercy of, you know, how Apple is going to play, you know, this product versus that product. Does that raise a little concern for you for the future? But, you know, some people say, you know, this is the way things are going. And if that is the case, are you a little worried about what that's going to mean for you as, you know, somebody who likes to have control over the process?
I am absolutely positively worried about that exact thing, Julio. It's the fear of the unknown, frankly. And you've given the perfect example of, and this kind of goes back to my phrase, I wish I were a fly on the wall of Apple, because I could understand the process in which they do some of these decisions. They make some of these decisions. I mean, you have products that are being showcased in certain categories that why are they being showcased? I mean, again, I'm going to be a little biased because it's a product that we're competing against, but, you know, we've been partners with Apple for 20 years, and you have products that, you know, probably are good products, but really there's no connection to, like, Apple retail. Their products aren't in retail. The product is, you know, perhaps doesn't have an iPhone or an iPad component. There's really no story or effective connection between products that are being showcased, or companies that have products that are being showcased, and Apple themselves. So we're wondering, all right, well, what does it take for Apple to showcase a product and then thus getting all this exposure and obviously quite a few sales too as well? I mean, what is that process? How do we go about doing that? And that's my frustration, my confusion, is that Apple will never tell that. I mean, and this kind of goes back again to the submission process too. You can have two identical products going through at one time, and one will be approved in days, and the other one takes weeks. And why is that? I mean, there's so many questions about the infrastructure that would be so helpful for developers like us, but. Yeah, the bottom line is we'll never get those answers.
Yeah.
Well, I had a final question for Michael. This is Graham. Michael, what are the implications for you, for your apps, or for the Mac App Store with the coming new OS X Lion release supposedly coming this summer? Can you speak about that a little bit?
I have no idea, and I don't think anybody has any idea.
They don't let you in on any of this stuff.
No, and that's, again, the communication issue is something that needs to be improved upon. But, we're obviously we have access to some information that they provide, but when it comes down to these, again, these logistical issues of, okay, how is Lion going to be treated, and what are the things that we need to know as a developer to start kind of modifying or developing with Lion in mind for the future when it comes to the Mac App Store. So there's a million questions we have, but we don't know the answers yet.
They will obviously release to developers an early beta of this OS, and but you have no idea when that's coming or
no idea
at this point. Okay, yeah.
Sorry.
Well, we really appreciate your time this morning, Michael, and the insights that you've shared with us.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Appreciate you having me. Yeah, it's been fun.
Great. Thanks much.
Michael.
All right, thanks, guys.
Take care.
See you later.
Yep.
Well, that was great. There's sort of this undercurrent of, on the one hand, sort of pleased that the App Store is there, but on the other hand, there's a lot of cautious optimism, and it doesn't feel very good. That's kind of what I keep that's what comes across all the time. Are you guys?
Well, I think we're all sort of hypersensitive to that, because so much of what is being developed and put together on the app side, it comes from people that are sort of rebellious, that are sort of free thinkers, that don't necessarily like constraints. And Apple, well, you can say all sorts of things about them, but they're all about constraint.
Well, and yeah. if it's any consolation to developers that are fairly new coming into the Mac world, the Apple world, I find it interesting that a guy like Michael, who's been at this for 20 plus years, doesn't really seem to have any edge over it, you know what I mean? Over the whole process. I mean, obviously the frustration that he expressed comes out, and even though he's been with him a long, long time, he doesn't have any more answers than some of the newer developers that are just starting to put apps in there, you know?
That's a really good point, Graham. It's almost like, I almost think about First Tech, yeah, different subject, obviously, but First Tech was the first Apple retailer anywhere. They were the first people to like sign a sales contract with Apple. You'd think that would count for something, but you know, Apple kind of swooped in and opened a retail store two blocks from them. And this history and these relationships, you know, with Apple, they sometimes don't count. They don't count for very much.
Yeah, which is, you know, kind of goes against what people, how people would think business would operate, you know, but.
No, I don't think so at all. I think it's all about the way that people expect business to operate now.
Well, that's what I mean. And it's, you know, it's strange.
Here's the thing though. If you look at other retail situations, and I'm talking about when I used to call on Target stores when I was a manufacturer's rep, and all of a sudden there'd be a big coup that they had landed some major brand who had made the decision to essentially walk away from mom and pop retail and department store retail and go into the mass merchant. And because once you go there, you can't go back. Because once you've gone mass, then all of a sudden you've undercut your price and everything else. And I've seen this play out over and over and over and over again throughout my career, is that, you know, companies, especially if they've got a dominant brand like an Apple, or, you know, if it's Ralph Lauren, you know, they make decisions to, you know, maybe do a separate brand, or they make decisions to allow mass merchants because they have to grow to the next level. and you got to leave somebody behind. And it's you know, it's not personal, it's business, as the, as they always said in The Sopranos, right?
Yes, he said it's not personal, it's business. Which makes it all right, you know. It's, you well, know
but you
can,
got, yeah, but
you can
but
stomp
I know.
On anybody as long as you call it business.
Well, you, but you can't argue with what Apple's done with their growth.
You can't.
You know, it's and I should disclaim that
you are a shareholder.
I'm a shareholder. And yeah. So there's some personal bias there, but
a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. So Julio, just out of curiosity, speaking of shareholder. When you are out doing all this with all these different companies and so forth, does the Pioneer Press have specifics on whether or not you can hold an equity position in a company?
Oh, you mean have Apple stock or whatever?
Well, either Apple stock or, you know, if there was a software company, not that Mariner's public, but if they were, you know, do you have to recuse yourself from certain kinds of coverage?
Oh, not really sure I understand your question, but I can't absolutely have any financial stake whatsoever in anything I cover.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's a fireable offense. So I don't have Apple stock or anything like that. No.
Do we have that kind of policy at Minovate? I don't think we do.
Not really. No,
if there was compensation, we might.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yes, we're unencumbered. Unencumbered by cash. That's the great thing. We're unencumbered by cash. That's good.
I love it.
Oh, man. Yeah. So, Julio, what other kinds of things are you seeing happen with the App Store, with other companies?
Well, the App Store is interesting for me because it is bringing, you know, I'm talking about as a Mac user, it's bringing to my attention an interesting apps that otherwise I would have never discovered. There's just to give you kind of one wacky example, there's this one weather app which is kind of playful. You know, the way they tell you what the weather is going to be like is to tell you what kind of clothes you have to wear tomorrow. You know, if it's going to be really cold tomorrow, then they show a little person with mittens and so forth. Kind of fun, you know, not a groundbreaking app by any means, but it's just something that sort of crossed my radar because of the App Store that otherwise I probably never would have heard of. So that is really interesting to me. On the other hand, I'm discovering that it's not really changing my software procurement process very much. I'm not buying a lot more apps than I did before because of the App Store. It's just kind of a convenience. And I like, you know, I frankly like buying software the old fashioned way. I like going to various developer sites and sort of enjoying, you know, how the process, you know, varies from place to place and the personalities that these developers have and how, you know, they put their products in front of you. Right. That it's a somewhat messy process, but it's an exhilarating one, and there's an antiseptic quality to the Mac App Store that bothers me a little bit. I'm sort of still kind of wrestling with my feelings, but I like buying software the old-fashioned way. If that goes away, I'm going to be really sad.
Don't be sad, Julio. We hate to see you sad.
And no, well, I was going to say that one of the compelling things that I'm not sure everyone knows about of the Apple Mac Store is that all the apps are family packs. I mean, you can install these things on multiple Macs legally, which you can't do with shrink wrap software, where you have to, you know, for the most part, unless you buy a family pack, it's one-to-one. And I think that's going to influence a lot of people.
Wait a minute. I didn't know that you could do that.
Yeah, it's just like on the iPhone store where you can connect it. I think it's up to five. It's either three or five.
Ladies and gentlemen, please, just a moment. Steve Borsch was unaware of an Apple feature. Ladies and gentlemen, please, a moment.
So Steve will be buying all of his software now on the Apple Mac App Store.
Yeah.
No, it's true. It's just like on the iPhone. So like, you know, and the way that, you know, it gets around it is that you have to use your same
account,
Apple ID on every computer, which you may not want to do,
but
you could do it. So I think that's compelling. And, you know, the update and the install process itself is radically simpler. And casual, you know, computer people will get all over that.
Well, there was a couple of directories. There was one called hyperjeff.os10apps.com or .net, I think it is. And I have that bookmarked, and it's a directory of literally every app that you can possibly imagine. And it's a place where I discovered a lot of Unix and Linux-based apps that have been ported to the Mac, and some really obscure stuff. Stuff that would never appear in the Mac App Store. And to your point, Julio, I often liked finding, you know, obscure utilities or things that I needed for a specific task. And most of these apps, when you launch them, would phone home and see if there was an update. And I see that as a huge advantage to the Mac App Store about always being able to keep your apps updated, especially with security concerns. I loved, and I still do, love to, when I have to find something specific, is to go troll for that and install it. I hope that doesn't go away. This HyperJeff, I can't find him anymore. So I think he just went offline.
Tried the decaf.
My sense is, I may be wrong, but my gut tells me that we're incrementally moving towards a future where the vast majority of software for Mac users, at least, you know, average Mac users, is going to be sold. It's going to be distributed in this lockdown fashion. We're headed towards a future where you're going to buy software on the Mac the same way you do on an iOS device. I think that is definitely where we're headed. Where I get a little fuzzy, where I start to sort of agonize, is I keep asking myself, well, is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? Is that going to suck? Is that going to be awesome? And maybe a little bit of both. I just don't know, because there are parts of it that are really thrilling to me. So it really makes your life easier in many ways. But at the same time, is it the end of freedom? You know, freedom. Yeah. Sell your software any way you damn please, any way you like. You set the price. You decide, you know, how you're going to do that, exactly how you're going to do that. You're the master of all your survey. If that is going away, that's going to be a little tragic.
Yeah,
you could hear that in Michael's voice when he said he hopes the Mac App Store is not, what was the term he used, race to the bottom, price wise. I mean, you know, there are a lot of independent software developers out there that have made a living at creating and selling software, and certainly they can feel threatened by large, you know, humongous entities like Apple taking.
Damn this free market system.
Well, you know that. You know, I mean, that's what it starts to sound like. You know what I mean?
Could I throw out one other thing that just as food for thought?
No, you can't.
Okay, well, I'm going to do it anyway. So there was a post that came out this morning about open source apps, GPL'd. GPL'd WordPress themes that have been taken and were being offered on these free WordPress theme sites, but malicious code had been inserted. And this guy went in and did analysis of where to find that code and so forth. And with jailbreaking the iPhone, there were some apps that people had started to talk about on these forums to stay away from, because the code that was in them was uncertain, was the term they used. And so I've been a little leery of doing certain things with an iOS device, i.e. jailbreaking it. I've done it, and then I've reverted back twice now. But I think about the same thing that's happening. The stakes are going up as more and more of what we do is mapped onto the internet and web. The more exposure we all have to doing something inadvertent. And my gut tells me that one of the upsides to having app stores, whether it's Mac app, iOS, Android app stores, whatever it happens to be, is at least there's another level of potential security scanning going on. At least it is on the Apple side. I don't know about the Android side and so on, but that will offer one more layer of protection potentially. Do you think that's on? Do you think that's off? What do you guys think? Phil, what do you think?
Well, I think that the one thing that we've always talked about when we talk about the iPhone versus or Apple versus Android or anything like that is we talk about the concept of Apple, you know, with that control, there's also some guarantees that, some piece of crap's not going to get onto the iPhone or the Mac or something like that. So there's a lot to be said for that control. But of course, it's always a threat to the openness of anything when you put controls in place. But that's the way it is. That's okay.
Yeah.
I think it's okay. We talk a lot about and we hear a lot about Apple's control. And while, yes, I wish everything was wide open, there are a lot of positives to that close oversight of everything that is Apple or that interacts with Apple.
Yeah, I had kind of an interesting experience in the office. I went over and sat at Janice's machine. She's our office manager. And I looked in her downloads folder and I said, by the way, Janice, you have about over 1,100 files in your downloads folder. She goes, what? And she had downloaded the same PDFs multiple times. She had DMGs, disk images in there for software that she'd updated and on and on and on. And I looked at it and it was 1.1 gigs worth of stuff in her downloads folder. She had no clue. She goes, oh, I didn't know what went in there. And so, you know, and she's relatively savvy, not very tech savvy. But I looked at the advantages of the Mac App Store, and there's some utilities that we wanted to download. And I gave her a list, told her to go to the Mac App Store and see if they were there. And she downloaded two of them. She found two of them and downloaded them. And she says, oh, that was easy. I said, yeah, and now there's nothing in your downloads folder. And she thought that was just incredible. And so I think about all the people who are not like us. You know, not
thank
like you,
God,
Julio.
They're out there.
Yeah, but I think of you, Julio, all the stuff that you must have to look at and download and deal with and all the different steps that you have to go through to download the DMG. It opens, you drag the thing, then you have to eject the DMG, then you have to throw the DMG away and yada, 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 and then eventually maybe uninstall the software. And all that process stuff is gone.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's definitely the allure of the Mac App Store. It's just, it has exponentially made things easier for people. But it's one of these really fascinating questions because on the one hand, it has these enormous advantages. But on the other hand, it has these huge implications for, you know, for how much more control a computer company has over you and over, you know, people that develop software. The power, you know, Apple is gaining more power this way, saying, you know, this is easy, come along. And it sort of gets its tendrils into you. I don't mean to sound, you know, sinister, but it's just a situation where a company that has control freak tendencies is sort of incrementally sort of gaining control over a situation where it didn't have control before. And that is in my darker moments, I worry about that a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know if you want to call them a control freak company. Any company that tightly oversees.
Oh, Apple, come on.
Well, yeah, but you're talking about a company that oversees tightly their quality, their products. They're very protective of what they put out there. I don't know if you can necessarily call that as being a control freak as much as just, you know, solid business practices. I mean, there's a lot of companies out there that keep a lid on what they do and how they interact with other things. I suppose from a developer standpoint and from a true, you know, aficionado of tech and somebody who likes to try new things and really experiment. Yeah, you could call them a control freak, but I don't necessarily think they're that different. I don't know.
I'll explain what I mean by control freak. If Apple were the kind of company that put these mechanisms in place, but also put in place a robust system for communication, you know, for feedback. In other words, if it were a communicative company, not a secretive company, that had all of this infrastructure in place, but also made it a concerted effort to have those channels of communication open with developers and so forth, that that a company that had openness and communication in its DNA, I wouldn't be so worried. But Apple is on the surface very consumer friendly, and it is. You know, its products are fantastic. Consumers love them. I love them. I love Apple products. But Apple is just basically saying, you know, this is the way it's going to be, and it doesn't really solicit a lot of feedback from anybody.
Well, the other thing that I know from personal experience, running one part of our business, running an e-commerce store, what we had to go through to set that up, not only to be able to make sure that we had an engine that would be able to handle transactions from multiple countries around the world, but also what we have to go through to ship stuff out. If we ship out physical goods, and we're trying to transfer, we've got a few products that no matter what have to be shipped, but we're trying to transfer everybody over to digital products for downloads only, because we're giving them a $25 discount, plus they save shipping and handling, which can be as much as $40 or $50 if it goes to Australia, for instance. And I looked at the App Store and I thought to myself, if I was a developer, I could have instantaneous global distribution for my app, as long as it was multiple languages. I wouldn't have to deal with any of that. And then would that be worth 30% of gross margin? Probably, because that's what I'm wholesaling it for anyway, to distribution. So it looked to me like a win-win. The only thing that keeps harboring in the back of my mind and bugging me is like this article with Jimmy Wales that just came out about app stores present a clear and present danger to the freedom and net neutrality and to the internet, because and he said this was him personally speaking, that the iTunes App Store can act as a choke point that is very dangerous. And I have to admit, especially being such a big open source advocate, that I do. It's this love hate. It's this push pull. You know, I want the National Security Agency to be around. I just don't want them to be warrantlessly looking. You know, looking at everything that I do, all my communication. You know, on the one hand, I want a police force. I don't want to get speeding tickets. You know, so it's this. It's this constant back and forth between, the upside and the downside. And I guess it's finding that sweet spot.
Well, I think it's fine as long as Apple doesn't abuse their position. And there was a column that Andy Anatko wrote recently where he sort of compares the control that Apple exerts to like a luxury hotel or community. You know, you can go to other places if you want, but things just work in this place that Apple's created. Yeah. And as long as I can still put on whatever software I find on the internet and manually install it, I don't think that's a problem. But if with the next revision of the operating system, they cut that off and the only place I can buy software for the Mac is from the Mac App Store, that's when, you know, I put Ubuntu on this thing.
Right.
That's when antitrust kicks in.
Yeah. I don't think they're going to abuse it. I think just like on the iPhone, where they haven't really choked off the jailbreak community, and there's a vibrant community there. So, you know, and they could certainly, it's within their rights to choke off that development.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Right? So there are alternatives. And as long as there are, then let's let the market work.
Hey kids, listen, before we, you know, let's get it all out here. We're getting close on time, but let's talk real briefly about the Verai phone. Since this has become all Apple all the time, let's cover off on the Verai phone, and then let Steve give a little mention of Lion. So we can get all the Apple thing out. Maybe next week we can be Apple free.
That's a tall order.
I know.
Julio, you probably know everything about it.
Because next week I will be at Macworld.
Ah, crap.
Oh boy.
I did a blog post because there was some interesting timing on the very, you know, literally almost to the day that the Verizon iPhone was announced, my esteemed employer bought me an AT&T iPhone to use on my tech beat. All the reporters at the paper here are sort of being, you know, handed phones of various sorts, and it's sort of the phone they get sort of fits what kind of job they're doing. So an iPhone in my case makes a lot of sense. And so this AT&T phone dropped on my desk, and they were announcing the Verizon iPhone. And it's like, and I went for a second, I went like, holy crap, did I get the right phone? Should I have like pushed for a Verizon iPhone instead? And I did a very lengthy blog post. You can check that out on my tech blog at yourtechweblog.com. But I sort of went through all the categories, bam, bam, bam. And I realized, you know, the mileage of other people may vary, but in my particular case, the AT&T iPhone was absolutely the best way to go because my experience here in the urban core with the AT&T iPhone has been good. I don't have bad service with the AT&T iPhone. If I go out state, there are many vast swaths of Minnesota where an AT&T iPhone is a doorstop. It just doesn't work. But here in the Twin Cities, it's fine. Just to give you another example, the being able to do voice calls and stay on the internet to do data at the same time, that is very important to me. I can think of many, many situations where I need that kind of a feature. And if you go over to Verizon, you can't have that. Verizon iPhone, on the other hand, has the hotspot feature where you can turn it into a hotspot for other devices. That's kind of cool. And if you need that, you definitely want to consider the Verizon iPhone. But I don't really care about that too much. And so I did this laundry list of questions that, you know, Minnesotans specifically can go through to start deciding, you know, which phone is right for them. And I guess I was really pleased and relieved to decide that, in my case, AT&T iPhone was, you know, perfectly fine.
So you're not going to hop to Verizon?
No, not really.
So Tim, you've got the Android, and do you see yourself becoming a Verizon iPhone owner?
No, I'm still under contract at T-Mobile, and even if I weren't, because of the family plan and everything that we're under, I probably wouldn't make the move. So if they were able to come out with a T-Mobile version that supported the 3G bands and 4G bands, then absolutely, I'd probably make the move.
Graham, yourself, are you going to stick with the AT&T iPhone, or are you going to jump?
Oh, no, I'm definitely sticking with AT&T, and I finally qualify for an iPhone 4 next month.
Oh, you should wait. Just in time for the iPhone 5 to come
out. Yeah, you should wait for the 5.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, I'm not going to, I'm just happier than heck with my 3GS. So I don't need two cameras. I'm not doing FaceTime or anything like that, and not lusting after it at the moment. So, but I'm definitely not going to switch to Verizon.
And Steve, what about you?
Oh no, I would stay right where I am.
You got 3 million phones with those guys.
Well, so and the issue is that the Verizon iPhone will not work outside the U.S. So that would be a deal killer for my wife. Even if you go to Canada, it's not going to work. The other thing, though, I wanted to mention was Julio. You had said about the hotspot capability. The next iteration of the iOS. Has clear evidence that there's going to be tethering available in that, you know, having it be a hotspot for up to 5 devices. I think AT&T will have to react in order to stop defections.
I don't bet on it. You know, AT&T, you know, has held back features that are baked into the iOS. I wouldn't necessarily count on that. And I think the whole defection from AT&T situation is overblown. I don't think there is going to be a ton of that, to be honest with you.
Well, I think that it's going to depend on I don't think it's just the actual, you know, physical iPhone being available at Verizon that will affect what happens as far as defections, and it's going to come down to price. It's going to come down to features. And I think that AT&T will probably, Julio, be a lot more inclined to open up all the features of the iOS, especially since they have a direct competitor now. I mean, they were able to hold back on things because there was just nowhere else to go if you wanted the iPhone. That's not
I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. So, yeah. All right. So we've talked about the variety. Okay, one last Apple thing.
Is that Lion?
I put a link Lion? In the show notes to that great documentary that Bloomberg did on Steve Jobs. I guess they first broadcast it this past October, but I just saw it recently.
Oh, really? I didn't see
it's
that.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it really is good. Yeah.
Oh, I would totally recommend it. So I put the link right to the video.
And then the OS updates, Lion, the new version of the OS.
Yeah,
guys, available as far as a sneak peek right now.
Yeah, summer 2011, it's coming out. But here's the big thing about it. If you look strategically, and I guess we should have brought this up during the App Store discussion, but the one feature in there called Launchpad, which looks very iOS-like. I mean, you can just see that this year we'll see touchscreen MacBooks.
Yep.
It'll just, it's the next natural evolution of where this is going.
Oh, no, absolutely not. That's never going to happen.
I can't see it.
And we'll never be watching video on a small screen either.
True.
You're right. Yeah, you're right.
I don't know. I don't really want touchscreen on my MacBook simply because I get tired of wiping that. You know, I get tired of wiping my phone off, much less.
Well, that's true. But
because I eat a lot of potato chips and do a lot of surfing at the same time.
So. I predict it's going to happen.
Okay.
This year.
Be that way.
Yeah.
All right. We've done everything Apple.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and just an update. Next week is not Macworld. It's the week after. So I'll be in California.
We could conceivably do an Apple-free podcast.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I'll have to be remote from California, though.
We'll have to sedate Steve and Graham, but I think we could do it.
Well, there's a chance I could be there, too. Is Julio going, too? You and Julio, Tim?
Well, I'll be there for sure.
I'm inclined not to go. That may change.
Yeah.
Well, is there really going to be any announcements that are going to be that compelling?
No, not really. Macworld show is just in general has remains a viable event, but has declined significantly in terms of like newsworthiness. You know, as a journalist, I pick my battles very carefully at which trips I'm going to take, and Macworld is. Very, you know, I'm just speaking as a Pioneer Press journalist here. It's very, very low priority. It's a very inside baseball event that doesn't have a lot of bang for my buck in terms of, you know, stuff that I can write for the paper.
Yeah.
And so I'd love to go personally. I'd love to hang out there every year, but you know, as a journalist, I'd rather like hold out for some big Apple campus or San Francisco product.
Yeah, like the iPad 2 announcement that's forthcoming, I'm sure. Yeah. Exactly. But it's a meeting of the tribes. I haven't been for 14 years, so it's going to be interesting to see the difference.
Why are you going to?
I just happen to be out in California on business, and there's a big wine tasting the Saturday that is. So I'll be in San Francisco, and a friend of mine said, hey, let's go to Macworld. So we're going.
Are you excited?
Yeah, no, I haven't been literally in 14 years. So I think it was the first year or the year after that Steve Jobs came back to Apple. So as I recall, during its keynote, it was something like the original iMac was introduced. So it was pretty crazy.
There you go. All right, guys, let's wrap it up.
Yep.
Enough of this Apple talk.
All right, gentlemen.
All right. Yep. Have a great week. We'll talk again next week on the Minivate Gang podcast.
Yep. Take care, everybody.
Yeah, you guys.
See you then.
Bye-bye.